You're listening to a Journal Watch podcast called Clinical Conversations. It's for the week of June 19th. I'm Joe Elia. This is podcast number 46. Call us at 1-617-440-4374 with suggestions or write to jelia@nejm.org. This week, we've got an interview with Dr. Jody Siegel. Her meta-analysis on the value of testing for mutations in clotting factors among patients with venous thromboembolism appears in this week's JAMA. A look at the other clinical news first. We're changing our approach to summarizing the medical news. To simplify matters, I'm going to offer at most 30 words on each major story, and if you're interested in further details, they are all available at Physicians First Watch or by following the links on our website, podcasts.jwatch.org. First, this week the CDC urged better vigilance about infection control procedures in caring for patients with H1N1 flu. Next, the FDA warned about Zicam intranasal cold remedies. They contain zinc and can cause a loss of the patient's sense of smell. Toss them, the FDA advised. Renal stents don't improve renal function in renal artery stenosis and may cause more harm than good owing to procedural complications, according to an Annals of Internal Medicine article. Finally, leukotriene modifiers used in asthma and allergy treatments have been associated with neuropsychiatric complications. The FDA announced that it has sought a label change for Singulair, Acalate, and Xyflo. Now, on to the interview. If knowing the results of a genetic test don't affect your management of the case, was a test worth doing? About 5 years ago, the FDA approved two tests for clotting mutations that raise the risks for venous thromboembolism, factor V Leiden and the prothrombin mutation. The CDC wondered whether these tests were safe and useful as part of its larger look at genetics testing, and so researchers at Johns Hopkins examined the published literature in an attempt to find out. They analyzed almost 50 articles and found that only one of the mutations, factor V Leiden, was clearly associated with recurrence of VTE or risk for incident VTE among family members of probands. The paper's first author, Dr. Jody Siegel, has agreed to discuss her team's findings with us. Dr. Siegel is an associate professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins. Her research deals with the clinical epidemiology of thrombosis and other blood disorders. Thank you for the time today, Dr. Siegel.
Certainly.
So you found that, at least on the basis of published evidence, knowing a patient's genetic status vis-a-vis these two mutations didn't seem to change the case management. Is that overstating the case?
No, that's true. We actually found no studies that actually tested whether testing patients alters their management and then alters their outcome. There were no studies in the literature of that question.
The reason that there were no studies in the literature, I mean, is the fact that there were no studies in the literature perhaps a good indication that the same is true clinically, that people who are ordering these tests, the odd resident or somebody who's, who's up on their genetics, is it likely that those people are ordering the test and using it?
I think people are ordering the test. We really don't know if people are altering their management of patients based on test results. I tend to think they are not. Certainly the recommendations for managing venous thrombosis don't really change based on knowledge of these mutations, so I'm really not certain how people use this information in practice.
So it's really only the likelihood that you examined whether these mutations were harbingers for the recurrence of VTE. Or for incident VTE among relatives of patients, is that right?
Right. We wanted to be able to answer the question on behalf of the CDC whether these are useful tests or not. So as part of answering the bigger question, we did try to answer the question based on what the evidence is, do these tests predict recurrent thrombosis? Do these tests predict incident thrombosis in family members? Because that is a piece of answering the question.
Mm-hmm. And you found that people who were homozygous for factor V Leiden were at increased risk for recurrence of VTE.
Yes, there's some evidence that they're at increased risk.
And their family members were at increased risk as well. Isn't that right? Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, but with the prothrombin mutation, I'm inferring that there weren't enough studies for you to come to any conclusions about that, except that the mutation seems rare, and as a result of that, you didn't have enough data to come up with good odds ratios.
That's true. There were fewer studies of the prothrombin mutation, although there were a number of studies about heterozygous prothrombin mutation in people who've had VTE. And it's true, the confidence interval was wide, and the point estimate for the odds ratio was not very high.
The result or the mutation that seems to have the best indicators going for it right now is factor V Leiden, is that right?
I would say the evidence supports that factor V Leiden predicts risk more so than does prothrombin, yes.
Okay. And are there other genetic tests under similar scrutiny that you're aware of?
Sure, and that is what the EGAP group of the CDC does. They've been looking at the mutation that affects warfarin metabolism.
Okay, and but those are under examination in the same way that in using the same approach that you did. You have some recommendations at the end of the article for future research, and one of them is to set up. Could you describe it briefly?
Well, given that there's an absence of trials that actually answer the question, then a recommendation would be for a clinical trial that actually answers the question, does randomizing patients to testing for the mutation and not testing for the mutation affect their outcomes?
Okay. Now, do you have a group of people? Is your group of co-authors... Is it a team that does similar research? And if so, what's next? What are you looking at next?
So I'm an associate director of the Evidence-Based Practice Center at Johns Hopkins, which is funded by Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. So we're constantly doing systematic reviews of the literature, not necessarily on topics of hemostasis, but on other topics, including use of diabetes drugs, use of health information technology.
A clinician who's read your article in JAMA this week, what might they do differently next week in the light of your findings? And I'm not asking you to make a recommendation. What might it mean for clinical practice in general, and maybe for genetic testing or other such possibly esoteric testing?
Well, I think I would answer that question in saying, let's see what EGAP is going to recommend. They're the ones who partnered with us. They're the ones who wanted this evidence review so that they and their experts can generate recommendations to clinicians about how to use these tests. I don't know what they're going to recommend based on this literature. I'm fascinated to see what they're going to recommend. I think all I can say right now is that the evidence supporting the use of these tests is not as strong, I think, as people think it is.
Okay.
Therefore, the benefits of doing these tests may be, you know, far less than people are expecting.
In your experience, do you notice that these tests are often requested?
Oh yes, these are widely used tests.
They are
almost reflexively.
And if you judging from the literature, one has to wonder what they're being used for then.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, we will look forward to their recommendations then. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you for your talking with us today, Dr. Siegel, and I look forward to your next foray out into this into these woods. Thank you.
Thanks.
We're all ears at 1-617-440-4374. Give us a ring or drop me a note at jelia@nejm.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adoriano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next week. We'll be here. Enough said.